Oh man, it's a bunch of people in big, bulky costumes with British accents. Oh, this is gonna be great. It's just like that guy in the telephone box. Wait, it's not? We're talking about Hyperdrive. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to your new favorite show, The More You Nerd, where we are back with another kind of Trek-like, keep on trekking, keep it trekking, whatever I called this. I don't know. I should do research before I post episodes, where we are covering another Star Trek-like show. And this week, we are covering Hyperdrive, which is a pretty blatant parody series, but it's British. So I need the tea to my crumpets, the guard that doesn't talk or move or laugh to my annoying tourist character. Miles, how are you, my friend?
I'm actually pretty great, seeing you struggle to think of anything British.
Which is funny because there is so much stuff. Like as I was watching this, I'm Drew, by the way. I don't think I said my own name. As I was watching this, I would come across things that I would then pause and Google and then text Miles the Wikipedia article of this very specific British reference. And I did that no fewer than 4 times,
yeah. And I mean, some of them were like, okay, they did give context within the show, like Gary Neville being a footballer, but like finding out that, like, oh, the reason he was so good is because he figured out this equation.
he invented artificial gravity.
Artificial gravity.
He came up with the idea at during during halftime at the 2004 championships, but he kept it a secret for 15 years until he got the math right.
Is a gag that I really like. Yes, it's one that I had to look up because, you know, there are some shows obviously that like they'll throw a mile a minute references. I don't know if that's a deep cut at all, even for British people. But you know, watching a lot of Archer, you know, they will put like bury a reference in a murmured like insult, and it's like this crazy deep cut to this like insane case that happened in 1955, and you start going down Wikipedia rabbit holes, and it's stuff like that I always love. And so this time it's obviously like, you know, we're catching these because we're not from the culture, and so I don't know if these are deep cuts for folks from the UK or not. And none of our UK listeners will tell us.
Not that we've asked, but...
Not that we've asked, but I did ask some stuff from Space 1999. I got a big old... I don't know.
So this show stars Nick Frost, who... I mean, let's face it, I love Nick Frost. He was a big part of Into the Badlands that we covered on this show many years ago.
I finished that show. I loved what we watched.
I went a little bit farther.
I finished the first season, I think.
I got through, I think, the third, but then it got weird, and I don't know. I think it might have gotten canceled before it got a resolution.
You might be right, because I think it only had 3 seasons.
Then maybe I didn't finish the third season, because I know I didn't finish the show.
I know I finished the first season and really, really liked it. I need to revisit that. That show is awesome. Anyway, yes, Nick Frost.
Anyway, Nick Frost, who is probably best known for his work in the Cornetto trilogy and just his constant work with Simon Pegg. They've been friends for years. He was Ed in Shaun of the Dead. He was the other cop in Hot Fuzz. He's been in...
Which are the big two, really.
Yeah.
And he's constantly worked, you know, just like Simon Pegg.
Yeah. Oh, he's apparently in in the live action How to Train Your Dragon coming out this year as Gobber, which I'm very excited to see. He's going to be a great Gobber. I don't think I knew that.
I don't know much about that that franchise. I've seen one or two of the movies. But yeah, no, I mean, Nick Frost has constantly popped up. He had a two episode appearance, one kind of a cameo, as Santa Claus in Doctor Who about a decade ago, which was pretty fun.
He has most recently been the in the Star Wars franchise. He is now part of Star Wars 2. Much like Simon Pegg, he was SM-33 in Skeleton Crew, which was great. Been in a ton.
He was so good in that, and that series is so great until it isn't.
You like Skeleton Crew?
I love Skeleton Crew until the last episode.
Well, that's a different conversation.
It's still fine. It was like three episodes mashed into one.
Regardless, apparently Nick Frost has also been cast as Hagrid in the new Harry Potter series that may or may not be happening.
Cool casting. We'll never watch it.
I think it's going to be a good Hagrid, but yeah, also I don't really care to see all of that. Anyway,
yeah.
Nick Frost plays Commander Mike Hendo Henderson. He always, every time he says his name, a different little nickname comes in.
I love that. Like, I think one of the strongest points, I think, is their leading man in this show, because Nick Frost, I mean, he just brings the right charisma.
Yes.
And when you're doing a Trek like parody, it's sticky, you know, because you want to do that fine line, which Seth MacFarlane was able to do, because he ended up turning it into, from a parody to a straight up, oh, this is my science fiction show with a little bit of comedy. This stays a stalwart British sitcom for better or for worse. Like, I've watched a lot of British sitcoms from this time period, and sometimes, and it's like watching Japanese movies from like around this time, where it's like British sitcoms in the 2000s look like they were made in like 1989.
Some of that is just the video quality. Some of it is
no, but it's not just this show. It's like IT Crowd, all of that. Like, they all kind of have this look where, you know, it was certainly shot like in a studio or something. But yeah, it's certainly the type of cameras they're using. But it makes it look not cheaper, just older.
Yeah. Henderson, Commander Henderson, is the commander of the HMS Camden Lock. Camden Lock, by the way, is a small part of Camden Town in the London borough of Camden, England. There's a whole Wikipedia page about it. Apparently, it's been featured in a lot of commercials. In fact, about 20 years ago, you could watch Kate Winslet walking around it in an American Express commercial.
Oh, yeah.
It is it looks like a very nice thing. The lock itself is human powered, so like somebody has to like pull the things open and close to get it to work. And the ship itself, the HMS Camden Lock, is based on the design of the BT Tower, which is basically like the BBC's tower in London. It's a communications tower actually, I guess it's not part of the BBC, but it's a whole thing. And if you look at this tower, yeah, okay, that's, I guess BT is British Telecom, so it's British Telecom Tower.
Yeah, I gotta say, I was not impressed with the Camden Lock.
I don't think you're supposed to be. I think that's kind of the
I don't
joke.
Think you are either. I get that that's certainly a British joke. But like, there are ships that had this kind of feel in space 1999, but it felt like a little more of the time and practical at this point, given to how our spaceships were looking. And this one just kind of feels like, yeah, it's not my favorite.
Yeah. It's from the time this show aired in 2006 and 2007. It had two seasons of six episodes each, so we're talking 12 episodes total, because that's what 6 + 6 is. I don't know if you at home were able to do that math, but there I am to help you. So it was, you know, a very, very short show, though you wouldn't really know it based on how some of the episodes feel. But yeah, it's basically Commander Henderson and his plucky and not so plucky crew going on different adventures to protect British interests in a changing galaxy. Basically, they are going around trying to get aliens to start businesses in different parts of the UK.
Which, in and of itself, is very funny.
Yes. Was it the port? What was the thing that I the first one I texted you, the Portsmouth?
Peterborough.
Peterborough. Economic exchange or enterprise,
yeah.
Or Peterborough Enterprise Zone, which, yes, that's a real thing.
Yes, the PEZ.
But yeah, so this show is very British. Let's be honest. The pacing of it feels like a very British show. When it's working really well. But there's a lot of moments where there's just stillness or nothing happening as like a scene change moves on. It's kind of strange. You've also got some very, very British side characters. So the first officer of the ship is York, who is like, imagine like a British military officer from like one of the expansionist eras. They are extremely rigid, borderline sociopathic, will randomly beat people, has shot his fellow officers multiple times, including the first episode of the show, because he can, believes that the other people are too lenient, etc.
I mean, he's essentially like the relationship. He's the number one. The relationship between York and Hendo is the same relationship as like David Brent and Gareth in The Office. Like he is the Gareth slash Dwight of the show.
Yeah, he is not as loyal to Hendo as Gareth or Dwight was to
Michael Scott and David Brent. Yeah. That is true. Although he will quickly cede his control as soon as he realizes it's out of his control.
And one thing I like is that they do show that the two of these characters do have a rapport together. They do things together in off hours. They play music together. They both are really into this show called Captain Helix, which was one of my favorite moments of this. Is
it's great when they're basically having the captain watch what's the equivalent of like old episodes of Star Trek. Yes. And I was very charmed by that aspect of the show.
Yes. And because it looks, because they throw on that like hazy, you know, 70s British TV filter. It looks like a soap opera. Everything's soft focused. The hair is huge. It's great. It's like, it's like Doctor Who and Star Trek and a little bit of Star Wars thrown in. It's very silly.
Yeah. And I think for me, what really holds this thing together is the crew. You know, I was making a reference earlier to, this might've been recorded or not, I think Drew and I's favorite cast member, which is Dan Anpalowski, who plays the technical officer Carl Jeffers, who is like, you always have to have in any of these shows this lapsadaisical, unpredictable, like jackanape, you know? Mm-hmm. Like in a lot of shows, it's often Noel Fielding, you know? he plays that role quite frequently. And he definitely has that like Mighty Boosh vibe to him.
Yeah.
And there are parts of this show that kind of feel like, oh, this is a take from Mighty Boosh, or this is like a long sketch from Little Britain. There are things about this show that really work. And I think most of it involves the crew interacting with each other. Anytime it gets into the Star Trekiness of it, I think it kind of falls a little flat.
I think that there are moments that it works really well and there are moments that it doesn't. And I think this show, as much as I like the character, I don't always love how her character is written and her motivations.
Mm-hmm.
And that is Diplomatic Officer Teal, played by Miranda Hart. And she basically, her most of her story is that she is a pretty accomplished diplomat that has just this unbelievable crush on the captain, and sometimes lets things get out of hand.
I think you've hit the nail on the head, because I've seen her in, I've seen Miranda Hart in other things, and I think she's recently Called the Midwife is one of her recent big ones. I know she's very funny. I know she's very good. And that's why when I'm watching this show, I can absolutely point to the writing, because, you know, she's doing the best she can, but what they give her is zilch. Whenever she has the moment to kind of freestyle a little bit, or it looks like she's kind of like improvising a little bit with Nick Frost, is the times where she's really highlighted and you can tell. And then there's other times where she's kind of playing the feeble, unrequited, you know, he loves me not kind of character. And it really just kind of undercuts her comedic ability.
Yeah. Because I think when the one episode where that is kind of let out is the episode with the Kwepu, which we're going to get into some of these aliens, because some of these aliens are very good and some of these aliens are not. And the Kwepu...
A lot of these aliens are not.
I found the Kwepu to be very funny. It took
the Kwepu were very funny
there. So,
but the Glish and the other two, I did not care for at all.
Yeah, I didn't love the Lalakis. I did love their song though, "Kill All the Humans."
I also love that Jeffers downloaded the MP90 of it.
It's not an MP3 because it's the future. It's an MP90. Stupid joke. I love
that. Was very funny. Very funny. Especially when they keep adding lyrics to like point out specific members of the crew.
because that's the crew that they have a specific problem with.
I know. It's great.
But yeah, the Kwepu are this sort of medieval race, but they've got these bright red latex and maybe inflatable costumes, like mm-hmm. big giant headdresses and things like that. And
they kind of have like Q Continuum vibes.
Like Q Continuum mixed with, I don't know, Leather Dom.
Right. But I did find them funny because, like, especially when he's like, "You marveled. I saw you marvel.
I saw you marvel." my Doom Ray. Oh, my intro is going to be about the Doom Ray. That's what it was. Gosh darn it. I'll go back.
It takes 3 days to have an effect.
Don't stop moving. Stop moving.
I thought that was quite good. That was my favorite alien interaction for sure.
But that was with. But of course, their Teal doesn't like that the princess of the Kwepu is sort of macking on Hendo, and she gets really drunk at the party and starts cursing this girl out. And you know, that worked. That was fun. Unfortunately, the B plot to that episode is not great, just because it's.
Oh, that's when they were having a space race, right?
Yes, that's where Jeffers is having a space race with the.
Love the idea. The execution just didn't land for me in that one. Which I mean, for me is a lot of this show. There's like I said before, that this is a British sitcom through and through. In that, like, is a very like by the board basic British sitcom, and it hits a lot of notes that some of those shows do, and it kind of hurts the show that it doesn't kind of dare to be a little more original here and there.
Well, and that's a thing where maybe it is, and we're just not we're just not clicking on it. So one of the big things about this show, and they highlight it a lot as far as I can tell, but I don't honestly know how big of a deal this is, but they make a big deal about there are the officers on the ship, of which there only seem to be six. And there are the cadets, and these are basically the enlisted crew of the ship, of which there are, you know, 100 or so. And they make a big deal about how Hendo was one of this enlisted crew. He was a cadet, but he rose through the ranks and went to officer training and became a captain, you know, through that, just through hard work. But he's very working class background, where mm-hmm. the other officers aren't, because they, you know, came from well-to-do families, or they came from money, or they came from this. And
or they volunteered to escape prison sentences.
Well, that's the cadets. That's the cadets that did that.
Okay. See, I didn't pick up on that. I thought that everyone kind of went through that situation.
No, because again, the officers' dinner was supposed to be Anderson, York, Teal, Vine, and Jeffers, and all the cadets were having an orgy on the floor.
Right.
That was a weird episode.
It was a weird episode, but I really like it. And we actually missed out on, I guess he's the navigation of Vine, who doesn't have a whole lot of screen time. Like, he has screen time, but he has like two big moments. And the one in this one is pretty great, because you find out that Teal has basically been finding a way to get to occupy the other officers so that she can use the commander's dinner as an excuse to have a one-on-one date with Hendo.
Yeah.
And I don't know why I keep calling him Hendo, but just do.
Yeah, he only calls himself Hendo like one time in the show.
But I know, but it's very funny. My favorite, though, is that she has been gaslighting Vine forever on the galactic equivalent of eBay. And just for the sole purpose that he will end up outbidding her to purchase a planet for 80,000 credits.
A planet that has no resources, no life, inhospitable for long or short-term travel.
Which is I love that line. It's yes. Great. And then so he and he basically kidnaps Jeffers to go with him on this weekend retreat to his new planet. And that subplot, I think, was one of my favorites.
It was great. It was really great. And I love, there's a moment in it where we finally get Jeffers' backstory, and it's kind of really sad. And he looks over at Vine,
assuming he's telling the truth,
which we don't know. He looks over at Vine, who has been naming everything on the planet, like, oh, this is Vine Canyon, this is Vine Mountain, this is Vine
up there, but there's Vine Pass and Vine Rock.
Yeah. and he and Jeffers just have this moment, and he looks at him and he says, I think I know what I'm gonna call this place. The place where they were just having this serious conversation. And you think he's setting it up to name it after Jeffers, but no, he names it Vine something else. It was just very
good.
A very silly, silly moment. That was probably my favorite of the six episodes.
Was probably mine too.
I did also like the episode with the space explorer Claire.
I'm half and half on that one.
So part of it is that let me look this up again. Sorry, I looked up next week's show, not this week's show.
Dare you?
So Claire is this. She's a solar sailor pilot who is doing a solo mission around this orbital path that they happen to come up against. And they try to, they talk to her briefly, and something just seems off. So Henderson kind of sneaks aboard her ship, and they have this whole kind of kind of talk, and you know, it turns out that she is driven herself a little crazy based on you know, being alone for so long. Part of the reason I love it is because Claire herself is played by a British comedian and actress, Sally Phillips, who I watched on Taskmaster. She was in series 5 of Taskmaster and one of my favorite contestants on that show. So I had a little more basis there, but she just plays a she plays someone going through something very, very well in that episode.
I just recognized her from, I think, I've looked it up. She's in all of them, but from British Jones Diary. She's in every single one of those movies.
In all of the British Jones Diary stuff. She was apparently in Pennyworth a couple years ago. She works a lot. She's been in a ton of stuff.
And she had the air of, we snagged a quality like guest star. Like, you definitely feel like, especially for the first time, really, is that you have like a proper guest star in this show. And I did like her a lot in it. Everything else about that episode is a little wonky. And I think that's my biggest problem with this show is, like, you're either entertained by the A or the B plot, never both.
Yeah, that's a very good point. It's always one or the other, but not both.
I think is why I struggle with this show a lot. And when one is like doing okay, but the other one's really dragging, the episode just seems extremely long.
These episodes are only 28 minutes long, but some of them felt
like an hour. Yeah,
I am interested to see, and I don't know if I'll ever make the time for it, but there is a series 2 that is 6 more episodes. But this show was written or was created by Kevin Cecil and Andy Reilly. These two people have multiple Emmy awards for a lot of really good comedy shows like Veep. These guys wrote and won Emmys for Veep on HBO. And I wonder, I mean, obviously it only had 2 series, so maybe season 2, series 2 doesn't.
Yeah, but the Brits, I'll give them this, like, when they don't have anything else, they just stop for the most part, unless it becomes a global, like, sensation. And even then, like, Sherlock only has what it has. And yes, those were, like, feature length each episode, but there's only, 4 series of that?
Which one?
Sherlock.
Sorry. I just got supremely distracted because I was literally looking that there was a pilot for this that was shot and didn't make it to air that featured Sanjeev Bhaskar as Henderson, a British Indian actor and comedian, mm-hmm. and Mark Gatiss of Sherlock mm-hmm. as York.
Oh, I could totally see that.
Yeah, I could see that too.
And so, I mean, we do have to keep in mind that, like, sometimes, you know, it's a one and done situation. And sometimes it is because it's not, like, setting the world on fire. So they just move on. That happens to a lot of shows. But yeah, sometimes it's because, here are 4. I mean, you look at some of the biggest shows that have been celebrated in the States. You know, one of them is the IT Crowd. It's 4 seasons, 6 episodes each, and that's it.
And like, one of those seasons didn't come out until well after the show had been off the air right. for several years.
So, I mean, I think we do have to keep that in mind a little bit. Stuff like an ongoing show like a Doctor Who is quite the exception.
Yeah, for sure. Or you know, any of their, like, soap operas, like EastEnders that has, like, 7,000 episodes or whatever.
Well, sure, but, like, that's like saying, well, you know, Young and the Restless has been going on since 19, you know, yeah. it's the same thing. Yes, you are going to have some ongoing things or some stuff that, like, constantly will pop up, like Poirot stuff that used to pop up here and there, and it was always like the specials and things of that nature. But when it comes to, like, you're just general television, heck, even The Office, as internationally famous as that became and then inspiring, you know, the American series, was what, 2 seasons and a special?
Yeah, 2 seasons and a special. And It's hilarious that everybody thought the American version would never work, and it is.
And it's like the it is now more popular than the other version ever was.
You know, Miles, this is probably a conversation for off air. Do you know that there are multiple versions of The Office across different countries?
Yes.
And the only similarities between them is that their first episode has to follow the same structure.
The exact pilot of the first episode.
Yeah, obviously changed, you know, for you know that, but there's always the office supply in office utensil in the jelly or gelatin. There is the fake firing. All of these things are there. It's just that after that they can, like, it's weird to watch, but it's also fascinating to watch.
I'm assuming you are saying we should do a month where we do like four episodes from different parts of the world.
I'm a little interested, but we'll talk about that later. Hyperdrive. I really think that this show, it lives and breathes on Nick Frost being extremely charismatic, even when he's not being charismatic. I care about what he's doing and saying. I love that he thinks more highly of himself than he should, but not necessarily in like a terrible bombastic way. It's so funny to watch him try to rouse his crew with this well-intentioned speech that just doesn't land because he doesn't know how to give a well-intentioned speech.
Well, and it's funny because then he'll accidentally give one in a quiet moment. Like, I mean, the moment that sticks with me is when he says as commander, our crew doesn't serve us, we serve our crew. And I was like, okay, that is a moment of self-awareness that does not happen to the kind of David Brent types of characters. And I think they go out of their way to make him not that. He is a working class, well-intentioned, I don't want to say buffoon. He can be, but he is not like a Paul Blart or something, you know?
He clearly knows enough about the job to have the job.
Right. He is capable, but he's also kind of a goober and
it's one of those things where it's like all the other people that he works with, you know, somebody asked him where he went to university and he's like, oh, I went to the University of Going to Work. Like,
yeah, which is a great answer.
It's a great answer. But it's one of those things where like he is a little bit of a fish out of water, despite the fact that he's also actually good at the job. He's just not good at the stuff that maybe he's expected to be good at. Mm-hmm. He's a good sailor, I'm gonna say, even though it's a spaceship. The enlisted crew, all the cadets seem to really respect and like him. It's the officers that seem to have a problem with him, and they're all the ones that, you know, there's a little bit of that. And that also feels very British to me as a complete outsider to British culture.
Well, and the funny thing is, it's not even the officers that really have a problem with him. It's York doesn't think he's strict enough. Teal's in love with him. Jeffers generally seems pretty fine with him, typically, as does Vine.
Until he wants to tell Jeffers the order in which to do certain things, or, oh, I need to fix this, so I'm just going to reset the system, not realizing that resetting the system is going to set every single thing on the ship back to default.
Well, yeah, he'll certainly do dumb things that will attract the ire, but I don't think that Jeffers fully disrespects him.
I think it's because Jeffers doesn't respect anyone, but...
Well, yes, we do have to talk about what I think is the biggest misfire in terms of, I don't want to say casting, because I can't really, I can't blame the actor, but certainly the concept and execution of is Sandstrom, the enhanced human.
What a weird character.
So the it's she's an enhanced human who when you find out the backstory, you're like, yikes.
Well, you say that this is a show where they're supposed to be on diplomatic missions and they regularly preemptively blow people up, which I guess is also maybe a very British thing to do.
Hey, they were our allies for a reason. So yeah, she's an enhanced human. So she's not an alien, despite what you might think when you first see her, because she doesn't really communicate the way that we do. And she controls the, I guess, engines through dance.
Yes, through... Well, the engine controls are these multicolored pipes.
Like, yeah, they look like organ pipes.
That she basically dances around and like rubs up and down to turn things up and down, and it's weird.
Yeah, and I think she gets more character stuff in the second season from like even reading the blurb. I'm like, well, none of that happened except for the chocolate incident. Nothing, and again, this has nothing to do with Petra Massey, who plays Sandstrom. Just nothing about this character works for me. And like, even the laugh of, oh yeah, we just have someone dancing and that's how our shit moves, is not a great joke. It's not that funny. And the only times it does end up being funny is like, I think she was told, hey, just do whatever you want in the background. And so sometimes you'll see her doing weird stuff, and that's when it's funny.
That I did like the episode where she gets a virus and she's just saying like TV 14 dirty jokes and lines. That worked for me. I thought that was funny, but it was also pretty meh. It was
which, if I'm not mistaken, was part of the was that part of the Claire episode, or was that part of...
That was part of the Claire episode, because...
Okay, that's what I thought.
Because they ended up having to talk to her in those same sort of bad euphemisms in order to get her to do what they wanted her to do at the end.
Yeah. Which, again, it's why it's probably one of the strongest episodes for everybody.
Yeah. But another thing, and this is probably the last thing I have to say about it, is I did also really enjoy the thick accented announcer that talks over certain parts of the ship, like today is take your clone to work day. If you don't have a clone, go see the clone officer on level 7. Or nutrition is important. Have food with your lager. Don't just drink lager by itself. Just a lot of those.
Yeah. For me. Yeah. She's, played by Maggie Service, who's done a lot of Doctor Who work, and I think popped up in Good Omens. That was some of my favorite stuff. It reminds me of playing, I don't know if you've ever played any of the I'm drawing a blank on the
Stanley Parable.
No. It's a series of simulation games. The 2 Point Campus, 2 Point Hospital, 2 Point.
I haven't played them, but I've heard of that.
In 2 Point Campus, especially, you will occasionally have. And I wonder if they hired her, because it sounds so much like her. Giving like school kind of announcements and such, and. It similarly wild stuff, like, you know, deck 5 is wind week today. We have a crisp Atlantic wind tomorrow. Who knows what wind it will be, or some of that effect. And I thought that was pretty funny.
Yeah, she does a lot of voice work in addition to just being in stuff.
I know she's done a lot of, she's done some video game work. I know she's in a lot of Who, and
but a lot of the like album Who's, like
Doctor yeah, like Who the Big Finish stuff and everything. But like, yeah, but I know she's in the proper series as well, at least once.
Hyperdrive is her first credit on IMDb.
Yeah, I saw that, which is pretty neat. I also, I mean, I haven't watched this probably in at least 15 years, but I know she's in Foyle's War, and which is a like a World War II drama show that I had a when I was a barista, I befriended a philosophy professor at USC Upstate, and he lent me his copy of that when we were talking about British television shows one day, and never asked for it back. So if you're still around, Bob, I got your DVDs. he was quite an older gentleman, but like, and this was like 2008, but you know, great guy. But yeah, that, so I mean, that's a weird aside. I do like her work a lot. Like there's a lot of individual factors in the show that are very funny. And there's a lot of droughts in this show, which is what makes me kind of a little enthusiastic about it, is like, I find that we're hooking on to certain moments that were really, really strong, but there are stretches of it being a bit droll, which is where I kind of, you know, Drew was kind of giving me a hard time before we started recording, because he's like, I know you hated it. And I'm like, no, I just didn't. I've had the least fun this month with this one.
And I get it. I think I still like this more than Andromeda, but I was a little harsh on Andromeda. Oh, can you imagine Nick Frost on Andromeda?
Absolutely.
That'd be a great show.
In fact, all of a sudden that show is even better. I mean, yeah. Well, as we said last week, if you take out Kevin Sorbo, this show soars. But like Nick Frost doing all the kung fu and everything would be amazing.
It'd be awesome. I'd love that so much. So yeah, Hyperdrive. I enjoyed it. But it is. It's very British, and there I'm sure are Britishisms that, you know, we Americans did not pick up on either.
Right. Yeah. I mean, and I'm fond of plenty of British stuff, but it's Britishisms didn't put me down. I just didn't think it was, I thought it was just okay.
Yeah. So with that said, I know that Miles is about to be called up, by the aliens to join them in their interstellar.
That was one of the better gags in the show.
I'm not even going to reveal it. That gag is so good. I love that gag.
I did crack up at that.
Poor Vine.
See, they paint Vine a little bit like he's going to be Miles O'Brien, but because the show is only 6 episodes, it's not consistent enough for me to like make that connection.
The fact that the first thing we see Vine do is spill coffee on his console and learn that it's not the first time he spilled coffee on his console. Like, that's silly, but it works for me.
It works.
I can't help it. Well, with that said, gang, we're going to wrap up the conversation about Hyperdrive. And we are going to talk next, because this is the month of April and there are 5 weeks in the month of April.
Which we forgot.
That we definitely knew ahead of time. We've been planning this the whole time. But this one, we're going to be honest, is going to be tough because of what this show is. The show we're going to talk about is Other Space. This is a sci-fi comedy streaming show created by Paul Feig, who you may know as being a TV director of like some of the funniest TV shows and movies. He directed Freaks and Geeks. He directed Bridesmaids. We talked about The Office earlier. One of the Office episodes that Paul Feig directed is the dinner party episode, which is one of the hardest laughs I have every time I
it's watch so good. Now Paul Feig, I mean, he like, even in some of his like perceived misses, which a lot of people would consider because he was, I think, he was the director of the 2016 Ghostbusters, wasn't he? Yes, he was.
Oh, that's yes. I'm looking at television. That's why I don't see it.
Yeah. He did Ghostbusters as well as being a writer on there. I really love that movie. I think it's great. But he has a pretty solid film and television lineup. And I gotta say, when this show was announced, I was so excited at the prospect of it. Because you have, yes, someone who has worked on some of the best American sitcoms, helped create, Freaks and Geeks, or I guess he was the primary creator of Freaks and Geeks, in a show that is, a riff off your classic sci-fi stuff, but has a murderer's row of a cast.
Yeah. So,
which is why we're doing this, because this show is annoying to find.
Yeah. So this show originally aired on Yahoo Screen, which no longer exists. It was picked up by a streaming service called Dust, which no longer hosts their own content, but it is apparently available as part of a few things that they license out from time to time. So we are just going to find it, and look around for it.
Yeah. Yahoo Screen was such a wild thing. Like, they made a real concerted effort when they made this show. Like, they announced this. They announced that they had,
that was the community.
Yes, they gave Community its sixth season, and God bless them for it. And this thing, like, it technically I think didn't dissolve in like 2019, but it was effectively dead as soon as these two shows went off the air. Yeah. And by went off the air, I mean aired their final episode. This thing was DOA. But that doesn't mean the content, as we learned with Quibi, that is not indicative of the quality of the content. It's streaming is still the Wild West. It's certainly a little bit of it now, even though it's starting to kind of basically become old cable. But everyone was trying to find their niche, and this was a decade ago. But a space show that has I mean, a very early appearance of our boy Rutherford, Eugene Cordero.
Eugene Cordero is on this show.
Milana Vantrib, who
probably most people know as the AT&T girl. I think she's been doing those commercials for a long time.
She has, but she also got to show her movie chops in like Werewolves Within, which is really, really great.
Oh, I knew her from like Comedy Bang Bang and stuff in that circle before she did the AT&T commercials. She's been funny for a long time.
yes. I really like her, but obviously two of the foundational people for both of our sense of humors is in this show.
Yeah. Both Joel Hodgson and Trace Below of MST3K fame are on this show as different characters, which is, it's going to be interesting. even Dave Franco is in this show.
Yeah. I mean, it's such a weird situation, and I but at the same time, like, this, I remember seeing a commercial for the show and being like, oh, this looks super fun, I'm going to watch this. I absolutely did not, because Yahoo made it actually didn't make anything clear into how to watch their content, so it just kind of came and went, and I didn't know about it after watching the trailer. And it's kind of evaporated. And so for the last episode, or the last episode for our Trek likes, I don't remember how much actual Trek. I know it's more like popping into a different dimension and trying to come home, which, hey, close enough. I was like, I finally have a chance to like check this show out. And I'm, by God, I'm going to use it, because we had this extra week that we completely 100% knew about. And yeah, I am excited before we dig into anime to have one last foray into space.
Yeah, so there are 8 episodes of this series. Because it is so difficult to watch, our plan right now is to just watch the first 4. Now, these are only half-hour shows. If we catch on, if we start getting into it, we may try to power through and watch all 8. I can't guarantee what is going to happen right now. But guaranteed, first 4, maybe more, we'll see. So that's going to be next week. Also next week. Oh man, Miles, are you ready?
I am ready.
I can feel it in the air, baby. You guys need to go to a different website. You need to go to CosmicCrit.com. Cosmic Crit is our sister show where we play the Starfinder role-playing game put out by Paizo, and it's a lot of fun. But a big part of the Cosmic Crit website is the link to the Cosmic Crit Discord. Now, if you join the Cosmic Crit Discord, you can do a lot of things. You can talk to me and Miles while we're bored at work all day. You can participate in your own Pathfinder and Starfinder games, or as well as just talk to other nerds, just having a good time. Or starting next Thursday. What is the date of next Thursday? I should have looked it up.
But next Thursday is May 1st.
It is the 1st of May. Oh my God.
The 1st of anime.
The 1st of anime, Miles and I are going to be using the streaming, it's a streaming plugin called Scener, S-C-E-N-E-R. Go to Scener.com and install it. You have to use a Chrome-based browser, I think, the Scener plugin to join our watch party, where Miles and I are going to kick off anime by watching the first 2 episodes of Macross 7 and the first 2 episodes of Macross Frontier. So that we can determine which of those 2 shows we are going to live stream and watch on our Discord live once a week until we're done with the show. It's going to be awesome. We are planning to kick that off 8:30-ish, 8:45-ish to get set up and sort of hang out and make sure everybody's kind of in and able to watch before we really kick off the actual viewing at 9:00. I do have some stuff to say. The Scener plugin is going to be required because that's how we can actually do the watch along, and a Hulu subscription if you're in the United States is going to be required because that's the only way that we can really watch it. If we could guarantee that everybody had both Hulu and Disney Plus, we may be able to expand that out into some other territories, but I don't really know how Scener works with different countries' streaming services working together. But hey, we can learn together. Expect there to be technical hiccups as we figure out how this service works. But we're going to have a good time. And hey, if nobody else shows up, it'll just be me and Miles having a good time. So next Tuesday, we're talking about Other Space. Next Thursday, you'll hear it on Wednesday. Next Wednesday.
Oh, that's right. We do have another episode before this. So.
Yeah. Next Wednesday, you will hear us talking about Other Space. And then just a day later, you can listen to us 2 idiots and maybe watch us if we figure that out talk about one of my favorite anime franchises as we sort of dive in to the full anime experience before we actually even reveal what anime is going to cover this year. So that's it, gang. With that said, email us themoreyounerd@gmail.com if you have any other questions or comments, and of course go to themoreyounerd.com and find our entire backlog of episodes going back so many years. We've been doing this. But with that said, gang, we're going to end the show as we always do. They're rousing.
Nerd out. Tune in for y'all.